Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wizard Talk. My name is Jason McKean. This is a show about accessing your inner wizard and aligning yourself to the magic of creation and moving forward in your life. Welcome. I am so excited today for today's episode, today's show, because I've got a guest who I admire greatly, and it's part of my mission to help share his music out in the world. And of course, that's the great Tom Caulfield. And we will get to him in just a moment. But before we do that, I just wanted to tell you what's coming up for myself here. And I believe it is at my website, jasondmckean.com, jasondmckean.com. However, it may not be up there. It's usually on my Facebook or Instagram, any of the other social medias. But along with my normal tarot reading schedule in Los Angeles, because I am a professional tarot reader in LA, I've got this wonderful teepee experience. It's called Wizard Plus Tarot in a Teepee. In a actual teepee, it's like this 20-person teepee that is in Agora Hills. And that's going to be August 23rd from 7 to 10 p.m. And that's a Thursday, not quite a school night, unless they're starting school early there for all of you youngins. But the theme is going to be healing and rejuvenation. And done a couple other of these events. They've all been sold out, so you have to sign up pretty quick. And again, it'll be on my Facebook, and I'll try to put it up on my website there. But a wizard and or plus tarot in a teepee, and it's a great experience to just like it's like a part of our inner child. You know, the part of us that loved to like make tents and teepees as a kid and go in there. This was like our private space or our fort. There's that energy along with, you know, being out in nature and hearing the coyotes and the owls and the crickets, you know, and at night the moon will be out there just creeping up over the hills. And it's incredible. It's really beautiful. And then, you know, I read tarot for individuals, but in this group space and utilizing group energy. And, you know, it's very supportive. It's loving. It's an amazing evening. So, again, August 23rd. All right. I want to get to my guest. And my guest today, Tom Caulfield, is an American composer. And a multi-instrumentalist originally from Michigan, but he lives here in L.A. And he's got a whole bunch of albums there. And it's like, you know, in the bio, it says contemplative instrumental pieces with ambient classical folk, blues, pop elements. And yes, I totally agree with that. It's very, very contemplative. And I just love it. Tom? Are you there?
Hi, Jason. I wanted to say happy birthday to you. I think it's a day late. Is that right?
A couple days. But
well,
I'm not counting.
I come into this raising my game because I understand you're 1 year wiser. So.
Oh boy. Yes.
It clicked over that day, you know.
It's possible, though, with the celebration and maybe a beer or two, I killed those brain cells that held the wisdom of that. You know, all the gains, I think, got wiped out, is what I'm trying to say.
Any of the progress you made was done by the how seductive all the new craft beers are. It can't hold a candle to it, I guess.
Oh my God, it's like it's just so wonderful. I've got like upcoming my cousin. Who wrote a book about like all these craft beers that are being created in just California, and that's got to be a great job, right? To visit all these breweries and all, and just sample the goods. It's got to be amazing.
My favorite way to drink beer is with, I guess they call them a sample, a flight, where you get four or five, like 4 ounce, because I love to balance the. You know, the tart against the sweet, against the IPA, against the lagers and the pilsners and whatnot. And it's to the fruity things and the dry. It's just a great way to go to me. And so, yeah. But
does that remind you of like the old like paddle board that the principals used to have in grade school? Those flights? They'd have like the holes cut?
Wax. Were you ever whacked by the principal? I was a number of times, actually.
Possibly.
But you know, it's funny you say, because my brother owns a couple of restaurants in Chicago, and I wanted one so bad that I was talking to him about it. I said, "You must have a restaurant, you know, a supply, you know, connection." And he said, "You know, actually, we have flights." So he sent me a flight, and I have my own. Paddleboard and flight beer. it's kind of good. The other thing that's about craft beer is it's one of the only one I can think of, real thriving small businesses. And you can go to a small town. Maybe you don't know anybody. I was up in Idaho last year, and I didn't really know anybody. But you can walk into a tasting room, and you can strike it up with anybody. You know, where's the beer coming from? How's it made? And you get you got a starting point for a conversation about the region and whatnot. So that's a good thing.
Were you on tour in Idaho?
I wasn't on tour. I was actually just visiting. We were visiting my mother-in-law, but we wanted to spend a couple of days in a town called Sandpoint. And I didn't play up there, but I'd like to. I'd never been to Idaho, and, it was beautiful, but it was just kind of different than Los Angeles. Let's just put it that way.
Everything's different from Los Angeles, isn't it?
Hey, I wanted to tell you. I saw, you know, I work up at the Getty in the days, and I'm a book buyer up there, and so I get I get publications of new releases, and there's. I think for the first time, the artist Pamela Coleman Smith, who did all the illustrations on the Rider-Waite deck, is getting,
that's right.
I believe, her first monograph.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's I believe she did a lot of work beyond the Rider-Waite deck. She did a lot of portraiture and illustrations, landscapes and whatnot. And this monograph not only features the tarot work, but all of that, as well as some, I think, some diaries and some kind of journal writings and whatnot. So that sounds interesting.
And so when, so is that going to be on display then, as far as at the Getty, or?
I don't think we'll carry. Actually, I'm not sure. I don't know if we'll carry that, but I think it's definitely going to get a mainstream release. I think it'll be easy to find.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah, because they call it like the Rider-Waite deck and all, and it's just like the two guys, you know, who wrote the background to it, but Pamela Coleman Smith did the artwork for it, and the artwork is like that's the most recognizable aspect of it. Now she's getting her due.
When did that come out? Was that kind of in the early part of the century or something?
It feels last, the turn of the last century.
Yeah, I was going to say, let me check who the publisher is on this. I think it's a tarot card publisher. It's called Games.
Like U.S. Games?
Yeah, US Games is, I think, is the publisher. Yeah, usgame.com. They're who's publishing. Yeah. But it gets real good reviews and stuff. So
have you ever thought of utilizing the tarot, any of the meanings to like transcribe that into music to do an album or anything with some of those meanings?
Yeah, I have. I especially thought about it after we first met, and I was very, if you recall, I was kind of casting around for kind of metaphors, and I gave it a lot of thought, and I think I felt a little overwhelmed at the time and thought I had to maybe need to come back to the tarot a few more times until it started to kind of, you know, started to connect to the same place that where my musical ideas kind of originate and how I apply them and that. But yeah, and especially reading recently, and kind of I was looking at it again, anticipating our conversation, and it's an interesting it's an interesting way to think about music.
It has a way of capturing all these aspects of life too, you know, from the high points to the low points, all those points in between there, and so it's a really, you know, great you know, just kind of reference point in conversation, and also, you know, with I know there have been other artists who have taken the tarot and as a theme and kind of built songs around different cards and all. But you know, it's like anything else. It's like when you go to a reader, no reader is going to be the same than someone else. They're going to have a different take on it. And you know, it's like Rick James would have a different take on it than Tom Caulfield.
Yeah.
Well, be a lot more Van funk, Morrison, I think, with Rick James.
Yeah, I'd like to see the Rick James deck, actually. It would be an interesting. I'd like to see those illustrations, I think. But well, Van Morrison has a great phrase, I think, that he came up with to describe music, and the phrase is inarticulate speech of the heart. And I think that's I don't think I've ever found a better phrase that sort of gets at what I try to do music and what music does for me, especially instrumental music, because I think that it's always, music is always trying to say something that is beyond what we can say with words. And it's, you know, it's something that's got a lot of layers and it's complex. And I think it's also kind of a conversation that involves our biography and also kind of our aspirations. And I remember when I first started, really getting a little bit closer to my relationship with what I do musically in a conscious way, was that I kept coming across the phrase to live in the moment, or to be here now, or the moment is all we have. And I found myself taking like kind of a little bit of exception to that, because I understand where the phrase is coming from, that you don't want to get bogged down in that, or you know, at the expense of your present moment. But I really felt that my experience is often freighted with my biography, kind of where I've been, and it's also freighted with my sort of where I'm trying to go, because I have kind of a hopeful I carry kind of a hope or an aspiration for something that's maybe improved or been refined. And so my present moment was kind of a negotiation with that past biography as it related to where I'm going. And I think that the tarot is doing that as well.
You know, the card that I picked, and I was, I think I tried to explain this, you know, before we started the show, where, you know, I pick the cards random. I don't just say, oh, you know, this card would be really good for a conversation today.
Right.
The Knight of Wands, you know, it came up, and it's a for me, it's like a quest card. You know, all knights are cards of action, where, you know, we take that which we're ignited with within our own spirit, and then start the process. You know, we start moving through right. sometimes it's the wilderness, sometimes it's the road that's less traveled. And I feel a very personal connection when listening to your music, because it has structure. You know, it's like you're a really wonderful, accomplished musician, and yet you leave it up to the listener to come in and kind of add their own take, or to fill in the spaces with their own personality, rather than just trying to fill it up with just everything and say, this is me, this is Tom, this is Tom, and this is Tom, and this is Tom, and this is Tom. It's like,
yeah,
there's space for the listener to come into it and just kind of wrap themselves in it and say, oh, okay. I can't explain that totally, but that is like how I I feel, like the feeling that I get. So how do you do that, Tom?
I think music is a conversation. I think you want to make something that is leaving something for the listener to come into, and to kind of bring their own biography to it. I remember when I was first starting to write, I came across the phrase informed simplicity. And I really liked the phrase because it kind of articulated for me an ideal of making the music accessible and easy, but also giving it some kind of a weight, kind of a philosophy to it, or a weight of that kind of reflected the complexity that of emotion that we all kind of go through and feel. And I think that's what I kind of do. When I was young, one of my first influences was the Beatles, like anybody that was born in my time. So even though I ended up really valuing the way that ambient music will relax the outer nerves, I still like structure, because I think it lets another part of the organism kind of latch on to it. It gives it something that's shaped and mathematical to hold on to it. So maybe that's the kind of the mental part or something, but it's a way of kind of letting the ambient aspects relax the kind of the nerves that have been maybe overstimulated by the everyday life, by the noise of everyday life and all the contradictions, but it will engage the part of the mind that's contemplative or maybe something more at the core. So it's kind of those two things. But yeah, I mean, my process is it starts with a lot of gathering. I read a lot, and we all have conversations and go through life's all life's challenges and experiences. And I, at this point, I've written so much that I think my brain is kind of hardwired to always be translating experiences into musical phrases. It always sends it down that pathway when I'm having an experience, and at some point they kind of culminate, and I start to almost kind of hear things, kind of hear either colors, which is textures or colors, or actual specific melodic phrases. And at the point I pick up my instrument, I think the subconscious takes over. It becomes just you find something, and it kind of has a little bit of shape to it, and then you start developing it just according along the lines of aesthetic rules, if according to dynamics, tension and release, and dark and light, and minor and major, and I kind of go from there. Well, one of the great things about having home studios, and I think you have a home studio,
yes,
is someone pointed out that some arts are additive and some are subtractive, and the good examples would be painting is additive. You're adding paint to a blank canvas, whereas sculpting is subtractive because you've got a big stone and you chip away at it and pull the object into being. So the great thing about having a home studio is you start with a phrase, and this actually I'd like to bring back the idea of the Knight of Wands here, which is action. I think that one of the best advices I ever got as an artist is that you're going to start to find your idea once your hands start moving, once you're active, and if you go into that with action and confidence, an idea that you might not even have yet can start to materialize. If you sit around and wait for it, it might never come. You actually have to start before you even have the idea to get the idea sometime. And then what I often do is build up and build up and then start subtracting. And so it's great to have the benefit of both methods, kind of additive and subtractive. And so you build and build, and then you start up pulling things out and cutting things out and follow your taste.
Yeah, I love that. I love that idea of, you know, where sometimes we don't know exactly, you know, what we're creating, and yet we have that desire to create. And so it's just like we just move forward. We you know, just start the process. And yeah, you know, a lot of people need the permission. They need the permission to start the process. And and it sounds like, you know, what I always like say is like wizard energy and all that is where, you know, one says, you know what, I'm ready, I'm starting the process. They give themselves that permission. And you definitely have that that wizard energy.
Thank you. Yeah, you need to start. You need to get your hands moving, because the body has a wisdom, and it's a physical thing as well. You know, I think when you're touching the wood and you're touching the nylon and you're moving the mouse and you're breathing the air of that moment and that moment of the day is when the idea can find itself and you get a sense of place. You know, if it stays in an abstract realm, you know, it can't get realized as well. So you trust that subconscious, intuitive knowledge or wisdom that's there. You just have to get the machine running to bring it, you know, to realize it, I think.
I'd like to play one of your one of the cuts that you've provided for me. This one is titled, correct me if I'm pronouncing it wrong or not correct. Warsawa.
Warsawa, I think, yeah.
Warsawa. And yeah. Tell me a little bit about that, Tom.
Well, now, you know, that's a piece written by Brian Eno and David Bowie. And that is a piece from the David Bowie album Low. And because I'm real big on the idea of time, and I'm always trying to acknowledge the idea that there's a lineage going on with, you know, historically and also within our own biographies, I wanted to kind of do pieces that are from the lineage of the genre I work in, which is, you know, kind of ambient or ambient chamber music. So this was a piece from when I first encountered the genre, which would have been probably in the mid-70s or whatnot. And it was Brian Eno had made Another Green World. A few years later, Harold Budd made The Pearl. And then David Bowie collaborated with Brian Eno and included some ambient pieces. And so this was one of the first pieces that really struck me and opened that part of me that was vulnerable and open to the values of ambient music. And so I kind of did my own arrangement of it here.
And this is from your album, Deep Cuts from the
Moral
Wilderness?
Deep Cuts from the Moral Wilderness. Yeah, that's my newest album.
And that was just released not that long ago, right?
Yeah, Deep Cuts came out on July 6th, and that's what I was up to all winter and spring. And so far, so good. It's it's been picked up by Sirius XM recently, and they've been playing it a couple times a day, which is really, really good. And it's also been picked up by Echoes, which is an NPR syndicated program. They're out there on about 120 stations every night. They've been playing it every day, so it's off to a good start, I think.
Fantastic. All right, let me play Warsaw, and let's see how long it is. You know, it's five and a half.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's play the whole thing here.
All right.
And it's you and also a couple other musicians as well. Is that correct?
Yeah. This piece features my quartet for the year, and we've played live together down at the Last Bookstore, and we've had a great time together. You're going to hear Judy Kang on the cello. Judy is currently out on the road with Celine Dion, where she's the featured solo celloist. Mm-hmm. And you're going to hear Mark Edward Lewis on cello and a great violinist named Zach Paul, who's just signed with the label Touch, and he's a composer in his own right, and bassist Igor Kogan, who's from Russia and also a composer. And this was recorded in Altadena by a guy named David Peters, real talented guy, at a studio called Oak House. The studio sounds just like the name. Very beautiful setting, natural setting. And
great. You know, my understanding is that after you get a few craft beers in you, it's like you're really great, like singing the Titanic song at karaoke night there at the local pub.
That's what happens. Julie and I go down, and it's Because You Loved Me, I think, is usually how we start. And then it's
Tom,
Titanic
do your
with Celine. The whole room singing.
All right. Here's Warsaw. Wow. That's an incredible rendition.
Thank you. I think that's an example of how space can work in music. I think that what you were saying earlier about letting the listener in is,
mm-hmm.
That to me is one of my largest goals musically. I think in a way, I'm almost thinking of my music as a counterweight these days. I think it's kind of because of the times, they're so information saturated and so high velocity, and there's so much brevity and so much speed. It's almost a bit of a gentle protest to find a place where we can all. It is.
I love that.
It's protest music.
I love that.
And it's a
fight, right? I mean, you're wanting to slow either the progress that we make as a society, that we think we're making as a society, you know. But it's like, you know, it's like the more technology that we create, it's like the more information that's out there, it's like it doesn't make us smarter, it doesn't make us more communicative, it just can feel like we're like just inundated, and
yeah.
So
especially living in the city, I come from a rural, I grew up in Michigan, where it was pretty rural where I grew up, and
mm-hmm.
sometimes I think of my music as homesick music, because I think I live in the city of Los Angeles, where it's pretty hectic, I am always going back to the drawing board and trying to convey possibly an idealized version of kind of an idyllic pastoral life that I used to have. And the more I did it, I started to think that I was possibly also there was a metaphor there, that I think that because human souls are put inside a physical body, they're also maybe we're all living with a kind of homesick quality, and we're trying to get back to something that we think is maybe more pure and more not burdened with the mind body problem, you know, the aches and pains of the physicality, and to be that kind of pure spirit. And so I think that's why some of my pieces have that very wooden or organic, and some of them, the ones that aren't as dark, have that kind of more pastoral quality. That's kind of a back to the garden kind of feeling I'm always kind of pushing at, whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right on. As far as like, you know, one of the songs that you sent me, I think it's the one that's more guitar heavy, you know, as far as like it's the acoustic guitar. Is that Operation Wandering?
Each Private Sorrow, yeah.
Each Private Sorrow. Like that song in particular is like, I was listening to it and it's like, you know, this would be a nice song to play at a funeral. And not because it's sad, but because it is exactly that coming home where there's a completion of one's life, where it becomes a celebration of taking the journey, but now it's time to go home.
I was playing in a club where I probably shouldn't have been playing one night, where they were expecting a little more energy, but I won them over, and I was playing, and a fellow came up to me and he said, and it was funny because usually, you know, I imagine you've played the clubs in your day, and I have, and someone would say, oh, you blew my mind, or oh man, did that get the blood up, you know, amped me up. And he said, the beer was flowing and the crowd was, and he leaned in and he said to me, this would be great for my transition to the other world. You know, this would be great for my transition to the afterlife, hospice music, whatnot. And I took it as a compliment because it's a story, you know, you're kind of getting, I sense I've always loved literature, and I love the feeling of prose as it washes over me. My favorite writers convey kind of an elegiac sense of time unfolding, you know, and kind of that weird idea we all feel sometimes of maybe everything's happening at the same time. And, you know, there's a past, there's a present, there's a future. We're all living all of it. And it's got a kind of a through line. It's got maybe an ascension or maybe a circle, maybe it's cyclical or maybe it's an ascension, but it's a story and it unfolds. And so the pieces I'm most satisfied with have that sense of a story happening, as if there was a life lived, as if things happened, things rose and fell, and there's a bit of a longing and a kind of poignancy to it, a memory to it. But at the same time, there's a kind of hope for something maybe you lived, or maybe something that'll live beyond your physical life, and I try to convey those. It's also a kind of with music that's initially relaxing and then hopefully engaging. You have to beat back that surface noise, I think, that maybe is in the nervous system from a long day spent, you know, out there doing battle. And this kind of music is usually listened to people by themselves. It's kind of a music of solitude. So I try to take listeners from kind of a boredom to serenity. Hopefully the first thing it does is just offer some boredom instead of all the noise and the action. And then somehow it kind of like a Mobius strip that transforms itself to contemplation and kind of a serene taking stock and a bigger sense of self.
I know that with your album, The Slow Dance of Time, that I have, and I'll listen to that in the car, because that's, you know, with CDs, I have the CD of that, and that's I don't have a CD player anywhere other than that now, just in the car. But it's certainly. There are pieces on it that are invigorating, that are more like up tempo, but the ones that are contemplative, I like listening to it, you know, before I'm going in to read for others. It does have a centering quality to it, and yet it is you know, it's kind of quiet, but it is hopeful too. I mean, I think it's sometimes difficult to as an artist, as a musician, to pack all of that into a piece in a kind of a knowing way, like, or a mechanical way, you know, like you're doing factory work. I think that you know, you take who it is that you are, you take your your literary background, but also this sensitivity that you have, and respect that you have for these larger ideas, these larger notions about life and all, and just the way that you weave it. You know, I mean, it's a real skill, and I really respect your mastery at that.
But it's kind of like an archaeological dig, you know. You start with something, and that's really, you have a phrase, and that's really just a starting point, and then it becomes kind of a dance of chance and intention. A lot of times, you set it out kind of a conscious intention of a structure, but I'll usually improvise over that, and then things will come out that weren't part of the plan at all, and sometimes they become kind of a central, you know, central to the thing, and so you move things around, and sometimes it's an assembly of happy accidents. And I like what you said. It's real important to have respect for the ideas, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to get out of the way, and approach it with that kind of humility that there are, that there are very profound things happening, and there are very beautiful things happening. And as I say, you're gathering all the time, and so. My pieces kind of become a summary of the feelings, of the predominant feelings that I'm walking around with, and the ideas to try to convey them in a way that they'll offer access to them for a listener. And for me, it ends up being a lot of, there's always kind of a melancholy, and there's always kind of a hope, and a astonishment in the face of kind of the amount of beauty that is here, and the amount of struggle, and the acknowledgement of pain that we all have to face, and then sort of find our way through. And so I hear it cycling, and I imagine there's some analog in it to nature cycles, to the Tao, to season cycles, and to extreme dynamics, you know. But it's hard to tell. A lot of it's coming from just inside me. I think that I'm absorbing nature maybe subconsciously, but. As you said earlier, basing music on the tarot or nature, I don't know that I've done that yet, but I think I see the same kind of cycles and dynamics that I see in aesthetics. So it's opening up to that, I think.
What's that?
I don't know. Where did that come from?
You mentioned the tarot.
Ah. that's a magic word that sets off an alarm.
It is time.
The Jason the Keen.
It is time for your question for the tarot, to see if my remaining brain cells are functioning as well with your reading.
I'm excited about this. Yeah.
What is your question?
My question is, I'm going to start with a really quick anecdote or a story. When I was playing music, and I was going out to the clubs years and years ago, and I went to see a band, and they were kind of a friend band and the circuit with me, and one of their guys was jumping up and down and probably flirting with women and getting himself a beer and whatnot, and he kept leaving the keyboard position empty, and I'm a little bit of a dabbler on the keys myself, and I said to those guys, let me come up, and they said, you want to come up, why don't you come up and fill in. So I did, and I sat down. Now, I have to confess, I was a little herbally inspired this evening. I had gotten into the herbs, and I'd probably even had a beer or two. So we were doing something, some probably kind of R&D
something.
Piece. And yes, what it was, I'm not sure. And the leader of the band gave me the nod, and he meant to say solo. He said
yeah.
solo. So
yeah.
I started out by saying, okay, well, I'll run through some of my rudimentary things and try to fill the space. But I did maybe 8-16 measures, and he said, keep going. So the herbs took over, and the spirits took over, and I just kind of let my hands go. And over the next 2 minutes, I played music on the keyboard that was probably 1,000% past any ability I knew I had. I suddenly was tapping a level of technique that I had never had before. And it was
mm-hmm.
just a real astounding experience. And it was a real textbook example of the fact that we have reservoirs that we are not aware of and that we're not tapping because we're probably or possibly, I should probably say that the other way around, we're possibly or probably, we're blocked to, we're blocking ourselves off from because we've limited ourselves in some way, much like the elephant whose tail is tied to the stick. He thinks when he's young and it's actually too much weight for him to pull away from, he can't. When he gets older, he's more than able to pull away, but he's been conditioned to think he can't, so he never even tries. So my question is, I don't know if these are two questions. If they are, we can just take one. But what am I not seeing, or how am I limiting myself in ways that I don't see that I am limiting myself? Is that fair enough?
Yeah, yeah, that's a great question. That's a great question. Wow, it's like the royalty is speaking so far. As far as I pulled two cards, just to kind of have that starting point, you know. And the Queen of Wands comes up, the King of Swords comes up. Queen of Wands, King of Swords. And, you know, the Queen of Wands is it's a card of the inner fire. It's I see it as you know, our responsibility to ourself is to always be the keeper of the flame. You know, that's our number one priority, is to be the keeper of the flame, and to you know, it's like no one else can do that for us. No one else can make us you know, wake up in the morning and say, okay, you're going to create this wonderful masterpiece, or you know, you're going to just start fulfilling you know, your purpose. That's our gift. It's our responsibility. And
yes.
And I feel that fire, that spirit, you know, that is unlimited. That is just something that you know, we can think that over time, it's like, oh yeah, I'll just kind of keep you know, practicing and building to my muscle memory, and you know, just figure out the mechanics of it. And part of that just being in a physical body and all that is like where we get, you know, conditioned to the mechanics of things. And yet the Queen of Wands, that's like pure spirit. That's like pure energy, pure purpose. And, you know, in that moment that you were feeling what you were feeling, it's like, you know, it's like you kind of like got outside of yourself. You fully gave yourself that permission to rise to the peak, you know, rise, like just kind of leapfrog above your ability, there, and to bypass the ladder of succession, right? It's like, you know, I sometimes see my querents, they will, they'll build each, they'll take each step and say, okay, this is the progress that I'm making, and I'm able to measure it and all. And then there will be some that are, they're just beyond, you know, just that process of where, you know, well, I have to like just take it nice and slow and you know, measure my progress along the way. It's like, boom, they like start at the bottom rung and they're at the top rung of the ladder like that, because they give themselves that permission to just rise to the top and to, you know, express something that they've never expressed before. And feel like they're not having to pay their dues, and it's not a bad thing. It's not a thing of ego where it's just like, ah, you know, I don't need to like do this. It's just like one, it's almost like an experiment, you know, where one just, you know, lets go. You know, it's like there's no you know, reason or whatever that you cannot just, that you can't, you know, how am I saying this, where there's every possibility for you, Tom, to, you know, create like a wonderful composition, something that you've never tapped into before. There's that every possibility of that. And you know what I'm seeing with the King of Swords, that's you know, a desire within yourself to keep pushing yourself so that you are like going to a peak self, and that you're you know, tapping into this is what's kind of tricky about that card, because it's like, in some ways, it's the measurable things that perhaps you know, you're getting hung up on, because the King of Swords looks to be kind of that left brain part of ourself. And you know, when it's mixed with the Queen of Wands, that's the right brain. The King of Swords is the left brain, and if it's kind of like the part of us that wants to be acknowledged out in the world, you know. Whereas the Queen of Wands is fine in the laboratory. It's like it's like the King of Swords. He wants to be acknowledged out in the world, and so it's about kind of retaining that structure. It's about retaining like the known, so that, you know, if you were to release an album that was totally like just kind of a right brain experiment, it's like you'd have to explain yourself to like your colleagues and your, you know, contemporaries, and it would be like you know, maybe you know, I don't know if you're giving yourself that total permission yet to do that. So you're asking about like, you know, what are you not seeing about, you know, you being able to just kind of like, you know, take off, blast off into this other realm there, that it's like, you know, super high end. It's like, what I'm seeing is that it's like taking, like working on a project that's just for yourself, where you have no intention of putting it out there.
Right.
Like you have no intention. It's almost like Dear Diary stuff, where you have no intention of publishing it. Not that you wouldn't.
Yeah.
Not that you wouldn't. but your intention.
But you remove that element, yeah.
You remove the element of having to make sense of having to, you know, be in a in this this place of where, you know, it's like someone who knows your music would, you know, if they were to listen to it and say, well, this isn't you. This is, you know,
right.
This is not what I expect of you, Tom Caulfield. You know, I expect something else. And so
it's an interesting. Go ahead. I was going to say it's an interesting draw of the cards. For that it's a queen and a king, so it's kind of a mm-hmm. masculine and a feminine, which is kind of indicates a balance. But I like what you were just saying because. That is kind of, I think, one of the limiting property that takes over with people is the idea of the self-consciousness or the idea that there's an expectation or that there's going to be a judgment, and that is something you fight. You know, you want to retain that free space, that safe space when you create, that you're not beholden to any expectations, and there's nothing there that you have to worry about being embarrassed by, because what you're aiming for is something true to yourself, and it's not to worry about the judgments of someone that, you know, might have a limited perspective on it, or it might not be their cup of tea, or whatever ulterior motive or whatever judgment mm-hmm. it might be in for. So that and that probably starts to accumulate, I think, in people. You know, we start to kind of curtail ourselves out of fear of judgment. You know, and I think you do have to watch that. So that's an interesting,
especially
really
as you gain more access. You know, as far as your music is being picked up by Sirius, it's NPR. And not to say that, you know, again, that what you would create is would be out of line, or, you know, sound bad or ridiculous or anything like that. It's but it's like if you make it completely for yourself, then, you know, it could be like a really fun experiment. You know, I pulled a third card, yeah, kind of while I was talking, and the Four of Pentacles came up, and for me that's a card of alignment, where head, heart are aligned, so that the feet, there's pentacles at the feet where there's that action can you know, move in a unified direction where you're on the same page, your head and your heart are on the same page, you're not fighting yourself, and again, I feel that if you like do a project that is just for you, right? I mean, every musician's inclination is to want to share their music once they've created it, put it out there, right. And again, it's not about not doing that, about sharing it, but where the intention is that it is for you, and it is for you to, you know, just kind of reinvent yourself. And to stretch yourself, and to let that unlimited fire just take over.
There's a cool phrase. Go ahead.
No, please.
Oh, I was going to say there's a cool phrase called rules of exclusion. I can't remember where I first heard that, but it's you know, you when you're creating all the time, you're always picking up, there's always kind of advices, and if they're books or articles or columns, and there's Brian Eno's deck of cards, what's it called, Oblique Strategies. I've got one called the Creative Whack Pack. and you know, rules of exclusion is an interesting idea, because it really just says it says create within these limited boundaries, and it'll give you a boundary. You know, make a make a painting using only shades of brown or whatnot. Make a piece of music that doesn't exceed 2 minutes, or only, you know, with only one instrument or whatnot. And I like rules of exclusion because they kind of liberate you from the sea of overwhelming possibility. And once you have a rule, you then are free. You can find a lot of variations in the rule. When I make an album, for example, the first or second piece of music will always kind of set the tone, and it'll be I'll be able to tell at that point that this record is going to have a certain character about it. If it's going to be you know, a certain instrument or a lot of electronica or a very minimal electronica. And so I know at that point I've got 30 more minutes to fill up, and I've got to kind of stay, you know, give allegiance to that original promise that's being made. But what's great is from there you're liberated to find all the variety you can squeeze out of that basic rule of exclusion. And so the same thing kind of applies when you have a whole body of work. At this point, you want to not go off the rails so far that you would be unrecognizable, even if you could. But at the same time, you want to find a lot of variety in what you do. And so for me, it's always kind of a tight wire where I want to always stay kind of cohesive in the general gesture of what I'm saying, but I like to see how much variety I can find in it. But what I find interesting about the tarot is if you then apply those same ideas, which you're applying to your music, you're looking to philosophy and you're looking to signs and symbols for guidance. Once again, now you're thrown into the sea of so much possibility. But when you then look at the tarot, you get some very specific ideas to concentrate on. And that's why when you bring these cards up, I like what you're saying. And I know myself enough to know I'll jump online and I'll read about these cards, and they'll give me a starting point for contemplation for the question I asked. And that's what's really, really so interesting about it.
Yeah, I sent you a photo. I sent you a photo of the cards, like so you can see
Great.
Like the process of how they're chosen. Also, in the background is the software that we're utilizing here to do an online radio show. And
oh, great!
You know, it's like a full picture of the moment. Full picture. Tom, our time is up. Can you believe that?
My gosh, it flew by. It was a great time.
I totally enjoy our time together. Where can people find you, Tom?
People can find me at www.caufield.com. That's C-A-U-F as in Frank, I-E-L-D, www.caufield.com. My name is Tom Caufield.
Is it .com or Caufield Music?
Ah, you're right. It's CaufieldMusic.com. Thank you. www.CaufieldMusic.com.
So
and
Caufield, C-A-U-F-I-E-L-D. There's no L, like after
no
the
L
A-U.
Before the L. Yeah.
Only
no
one L.
On the Rye. Yeah. And yeah, and my music is out there. You can check it out on all the major streaming spots. It's on Spotify, it's on Apple Music, it's on Google Music, it's on YouTube. Spotify is my listening streaming station of choice, so I find it really easy to find there. And of course, it's downloadable, iTunes and whatnot, Amazon. And
Amazon,
iTunes, yeah. It's on Sirius XM. It's on the Spa channel, which is 668. And it's on Spa Business, which is what they play in a lot of, you know, if it's meditation or yoga or massage centers or whoever is playing Spa Channel restaurants, whatnot, the Spa Business. And it's out there on Echoes, which is a great show. Everybody should listen to Echoes. You can usually find that on a local NPR affiliate. It's usually most nights of the week or weekends, and you can hear me there.
I was buying granola, I think, at Whole Foods, and I was in line there, and I saw your album there in it was like next to the Beatles or something, like in Whole Foods. How's that possible?
Exactly. Well, how Whole Foods decided to carry a Christmas album I made. They were so happy with it that they carried my next album, Wash the Dusk with Silver, which is a phrase by William Blake about getting through dark times. And it was everywhere. They carried it all across the country, which was really flattering. And I picked up a lot of new listeners. And I would see it myself next to Sgt. Pepper and think, that's a dream come true, or that makes no sense, one of the two. But I would see it next to all kinds of things. The best of Hall & Oates. It was always an interesting juxtaposition. But I was very flattered. And thanks to Steve Romeus and the people in Austin for that. So
absolutely.
Thanks for bringing that up. That was cool.
I'm going to play one more song of yours to close out the program. Each Private Sorrow, because we talked about that. And and you're available to play funerals and all as well.
I am. I can play hospice, I can play funerals, I can come to your house and just play you to sleep if that's what you like. Each Private Sorrow is kind of a riff on Plato's idea that be kind, because we're all fighting a hard fight. And I'll leave you with that.
Oh, thank you so much, Tom Caulfield.
Thank you.
I want to have you back, and we'll talk some more at a later date. But thank you so much for your wisdom and your eloquence today, and in both your language and with your music. It's like a real pleasure to have you on Wizard Talk today, and. All my very best to you and your wife.
Thanks, Jason, to you, and I feel the same way. So let's do it again.
Thank you. All right. Have a great day, Tom, and we'll be in touch. And I sent you the photo of your cards there, so look them up and study away.
Sure will. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. Tom Caulfield, again, his website, Caulfield Music, Caufield music.com. Please check him out, because he's amazing. And I'm going to end this show with his song, Each Private Sorrow. Before I do that, my website, Jason D. McKean, JasonDMCKEAN.com. And I am available for tarot readings in Los Angeles. And, where I work at the Green Man, we take phone calls, and I do lots of phone readings. I do Skype readings, all of that good stuff. And then I have a wizard plus tarot in a teepee August 23rd. So thank you again for listening to this episode of Wizard Talk. And again, this is Each Private Sorrow by Tom Caulfield. Thank you.